Right, afternoon everyone. We might as well kick this off. This is a session to be presented by Wayne Anderson on the introduction of risk rating, essentially to the ACC motor account. For those of you who have anything to do with New Zealand and read the papers there, you'll know that this wasn't something that escaped media attention and notice, so it was relatively controversial. It'd be interesting to hear Wayne's story of the background of that. For those of you who don't know Wayne, I'm sure most of you do, he's been at ACC for almost 12 years. He's currently their pricing actuary, which means he's responsible for the levy rate recommendations that go to the board. He also gets involved in product design as well, and hence his involvement in the risk rating for the motor account. And he also works very closely with the various government stakeholders. So in New Zealand, that's the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment and the New Zealand Treasury. So I'll hand over to Wayne. He's going to talk, I imagine, for about half an hour, which should leave us with about 10 minutes for questions. I'll ding the glass at 25 minutes and then again at 30 minutes, and you still won't have heard the official dings at that point, but that'll be time, hopefully, if you're close to finishing, to wind up and start with some questions. Thanks.
Thank you. So I usually do it quite informally, so if there are any questions along the way, I'll pop up to the microphone and do that. I don't mind that. I agreed to do this before it all blew up in New Zealand, before the long weekends of working, so it seemed like, and still seems like, a great idea. Just with any system, there can be anomalies in there. So basically, I'll take through what the system's trying to do, how we've designed it, and then some of the issues that we've got with that, and how we're looking at trying to rectify those. If this works. I also chose the topic, or I call it approach and pitfalls, before it all blew up as well. So it kind of is appropriate. And yes, it did make a lot of media attention at the time, and still does. So this is from our recent consultation. So this is the vehicle risk rating started this year, 1st of July 2015. And now we're looking at the second year and proposed enhancements to that. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is, or the challenge we had, compulsory motor vehicle insurance, 85% of vehicles were paying the same rate. So we already had motorcycles were paying a higher rate, trucks were paying a higher rate, but light passenger vehicles, cars, 85% of the fleet were paying a single rate, and that just didn't seem right to everyone. So the question was, how can we differentiate that a bit better? What can we base that on? So essentially, and I'll touch on it, we'll go into it, we used some Monash University research to look at how the model of the vehicle, how the safety design or the design of that vehicle protects you and other road users in an accident. Essentially, one of the issues that we have had with introducing this is that ACC is interested in protecting all road users. I'm not going to talk to everything on this, but yeah, ACC is about protecting or the interest of every road user. So whether that's the driver of the vehicle, pedestrian, or a driver of another vehicle, and that is a very foreign idea to most motorists. They care about how the car protects them, not anyone else on the road. And what we have done is taken into account, as I said, some Monash University research. So they've been looking at this since mid-1980s, and taking into account Australia and New Zealand crashes, anything that ideally involves tollway accidents in terms of some of the states in Australia is what they base the research on. What it's looking at is three measures. So the first is crashworthiness. So how well does that vehicle, the design of that vehicle, protect the occupant in a crash? So in this case, protection is the probability of a serious accident, which is either death or hospitalisation following that. The second thing they look at is aggressivity. So that's looking at other road users and how well the design of your vehicle protects other road users, so the other car involved in the accident or pedestrian or cyclist, etc. And then the third measure combines those two things together, and that is what we as a scheme in New Zealand are really interested in. So it's taking the crashworthiness, the actual occupant of that vehicle, and the aggressivity, the occupants or the other road users, and combining those together to come up with an overall probability of how well that car protects road users. So ultimately what we've done is gone from one single rate and we've split that into four rates, so four bands. And this is where some of the confusion has started to come in. So essentially it's around equity. So trying to say, well, that some of these vehicles protect road users better, therefore should pay a lower levy. Some of them don't do as well as good as a job. The problem is people are then jumping to, okay, I'm in band one, therefore I'm the least safest, I'm paying the highest levy. That means my car's not safe, which is not what we tried to send a signal around. We have things like here, so warrant of fitness is whether it's roadworthy or not, and this is around trying to allocate these vehicles a bit more, just like we do with motorcycles at the moment, paying more. So there's a $90 differentiation. Now, one of the reasons that we could bring it in this year was that we were also decreasing the average levy. So when prior to this coming in, everyone was paying $198 in total, including petrol, $104 they were paying for the $198 everyone was paying on average. So even those that are in band one, the highest levy rate, are paying less than they did the previous year. So to us it seemed that no one should be concerned if overall people are going to pay less than they did the previous year. The problem is some people are paying less, but they'd want to pay a whole lot less. And so it's it still made more attention than probably it would have deserved. So if we hadn't have introduced this, band three is roughly where everyone would have been paying. So instead of $198, they would have been paying about $104. There's a lot of stuff on here, but essentially how we did ultimately come up with a way to risk rate vehicles is taking the Monash University information, but the information is based on real-world crashes. You have to actually have time to have manufactured the vehicle, driven it, crashed, record the data, analyze that. So one of the issues we had was, what do you do with newer vehicles where there's not that information around? Now, what we've done is used NCAP information, so new car assessment programs, so the NCAP Australasian one, then the Euro NCAP in terms of hierarchy, and then finally the Japanese one, to capture as many of the vehicles in the New Zealand fleet as possible. So we've used that for the newer vehicles and then assigned based on that rating. Now, that generally is based on how well it protects the occupant of the vehicle, not all road users. So it's not our preference to use, but in the absence of anything for the newer vehicles. Then if it's more than 3.5 years old, we're saying, well, that's the minimum time that we need to have had enough information to base it on the TSSI Monash results. And ultimately, because everyone has to pay, or it's legally required, they don't all pay, most do, have to pay an ACC levy, then we've got to have some way of putting everyone else who doesn't have enough information through NCAP or through TSSI into a band, and so we've based that on the age of the vehicle. It's also worth noting, we could have made this a lot simpler and just done it based on year of manufacture. The main reason we didn't do that is that the perception already was, well, this is a poor tax. You know, the older the vehicle, the less safe it is. The people who can afford an older vehicle are the lower socioeconomic group. So the more we stuck into the defaults, the more it looked like a poor tax, whereas there are some examples of older vehicles that are much safer at the time, or safer than their peers. So the more we could put into using TSSI or NCAP, the better differentiation we'd get, but the more anomalies that would come out as well, and which is where some of the issues for us have come about. So these next three slides are kind of just of interest sake, and looking at there's 10 or 12 different market groups that Monash used to analyse, and it's just I've got three of them. The first one showing the crash worthiness, second showing the aggressivity, and then the third combining them. So you can see a large SUV, the third one, has a lower probability overall, and so in general, the larger the vehicle, the better it protects you as an occupant. If we look at the aggressivity, though, an SUV, large SUV crashing into you as another car or a pedestrian, that's not the type of car you want to crash into you. And so that score is much worse than the aggressivity part. And that's where, again, the confusion comes in, where people people buy cars on this information. If it's got a good NCAP result, an NCAP 5 stars, that means it's really good. But that may be not as good for other road users. So when we combine them, it actually stabilises out a whole lot. So the large SUV comes back towards the centre. In many ways, it doesn't actually look like there's that much differentiation, and there isn't. But the actual bands that we're using to differentiate vehicles is quite a narrow band around that wobble anyway. So we have had a lot of feedback in terms of, you know, why don't you just base it on something that the public knows? The public knows NCAP results. That's what people buy their vehicles on. And our view has always been two main things, that it doesn't take into account other road users, and that is of concern to ACC and therefore to New Zealand. And NCAP results, or any of the NCAP results, don't change over time, don't get updated over time. So the tests get harder and harder. Things like ABS, introduced years ago, all the extra new technologies that are coming in. So a vehicle 10, 15 years ago that got a 5-star NCAP rating is unlikely to get a 5-star NCAP rating now. So why should they pay the same as someone who's got the safest vehicle now? So, yeah, it was a great idea, probably didn't go down as well as everyone had hoped. The good thing is it did start the right conversations, the conversations we really wanted to have with the public. We just weren't expecting them to actually happen as quickly or as prevalently as they did happen. So the discussions around safety has been really good. The problem is it's been mixed up and, well, you've stuck my vehicle into this band here. This vehicle over here, you're charging them less, but my vehicle's got more airbags, or it's got extra features in there that you obviously haven't taken into account. Why am I paying more than this person here? And we did have, in Fair Go, which is a local consumer advocate program, put a lot of attention into this. Where basically there was some, a mother driving her kids around in a Nissan Skyline saying, well, I bought this car because it's safe. I thought it was safe for my kids, and now you're telling me that it's in band one. Does this mean I have to go out and buy a new car? It turned out, unfortunately, that some of the conversion of how we got from TSSI to the ratings basically got screwed up along the way. And I'm going to touch on the complexities we've got here, but we do have a very complicated fleet in New Zealand, much more complicated than most other places in the world, and a very old fleet. Let's skip to the... Yeah, so we've got 3 million vehicles, but in terms of the classifications or how they're actually recorded on the vehicle registry, we've got 86,000 unique combinations. So that includes spelling mistakes, and everything else possible. So we're trying to boil down 86,000 vehicles into 4 bands when a lot of those vehicles are incorrectly written. You've got it might just be a Ford car, not the actual KA one that's come out, but and huge spelling mistakes and inconsistencies, or 2 vehicles that are exactly the same but released under different names, and none of that information is readily available. So all of a sudden, we're trying to convert rubbish data into a meaningful result. That means that basically it's what we did have is something like 50 rules to try and clean up NZTA's vehicle registry. And one of the rules made perfect sense. Another of the rules made perfect sense as well, except in some situations undid the first rule, and we had this whole complication of things. So, we always put it out there as something that we knew wasn't perfect, but it would never be perfect if we never stuck it out. It's not until you actually get out that you can refine some of these things. And given the levy was going to go down, we kid ourselves in that people are going to be less interested in the accuracy overall. And if a small number, and it is a small number, a couple of percent of vehicles are misallocated, then we could fix that up over time. So we are now looking, as I say, into the second year of implementing this and trying to put in place a better system than we had in the past. We're also recommending further levy reductions, which should, on the face of it, be good. Everyone's going to probably still pay even less than they did, even if they were in band one before. But the other thing that we have found out through this exercise, and it shouldn't have been a surprise to us, but no one knew they were paying ACC levies.
They do now.
They do now, yes. So, I mean, again, it's a good conversation starter in the fact that you're actually paying for these claims here.
Look, I might be remembering this wrong or put it wrong in the stick, but at some point in time, wasn't the ACC made of funds that this park is funded by some sort of fuel tax?
It is, yes. Yeah.
So,
yes, yeah.
So what portion of
the... So it changes every year. Currently, it's 6.9 cents per litre for petrol-powered vehicles. And so in this, so, and these are for petrol-powered. So this is the registration component. So it's funded through petrol levy for if you're a petrol-powered vehicle or through a licensed vehicle. And so on average, it's about $80 that is paid per vehicle in terms of the petrol levy. And so that, and then the rest comes from the license fee. So that's why, so it's now $195 is the average that we're charging, even though the average license fee is $104. The rest comes from the petrol levy. The diesel doesn't have that. So if it's a diesel powered vehicle, then all of these go up by about $80. And it has not been a simple thing to explain, even internally, really. Part of the problem we've had is what is the objective of vehicle risk rating? Initially, it was 85% of the fleet charged the same rate. Doesn't make sense. Okay, well, let's differentiate that to make it more equitable. But ultimately, any pricing mechanism is either about equity or ideally about stopping accidents from happening. And that was kind of the starting point for vehicle risk rating. And then very quickly, maybe 5 minutes after that, we realised, well, we can't actually do anything about this. Because, even if you charge less for this particular type of vehicle, is that going to incentivise them enough to go out and buy another vehicle? Even if they did, what are they going to do with the old vehicle? We've got a very old fleet. It's going to take a long time for that to change through. And the only time you can actually influence it is in terms of new vehicles coming into the country, and pretty much all of them are 5-star NCAP rated now anyway. So TSSI has a number of limitations in itself. It's based on real-world information, so depending on how many crashes there have been for that, you're going to get different results and different volatility in there. And as I started to allude to, we don't necessarily have in there a database, essentially, which is what we have started to build now, of this vehicle here is also sold as this vehicle here, and it's been rebadged, and it might even be a completely different make, but essentially the design is exactly the same. Therefore, they should be charged the same levy rate. We didn't have that information. We've built a database now that we've gone out to manufacturers, to motor vehicle industry, and to the public through our recent consultation to say, well, here's our database. It's 2,000 and something vehicles long that says of all of these, this one here is also the same as this vehicle here for these years. And therefore, we will group them together and make sure they get the same rate. And then getting feedback on that has been a recent lengthy time-consuming thing. Apart from the fact that it's taken us probably 4 or 5 months to actually build that database to start with because the information isn't actually there anywhere. I suppose one other limitation of TSSI, the Monash information, is that it is based on the real-world information. It's only based on the driver or the injuries to the driver, and the reason for that is that there isn't always a passenger. There's always a driver. And quite often the information that's recorded doesn't actually record if there was a passenger or not, unless they were actually injured. So all of a sudden, if you're just recording those passengers that were injured, the probability of having a serious injury as a result of an accident skyrockets up because you haven't taken into account all the passengers that were in there that haven't been injured. Another complexity of the New Zealand fleet is that we have a large number of Japanese imports, and given that this Monash collected both Australia and New Zealand accidents, Australia doesn't have the Japanese imports, and one of the requirements for calculating a probability of a serious accident is that it's got to have been a tow-away accident, and there's only about two states and not New Zealand recording that. So the first thing is, has there been a tow-away accident? So it's bad enough for the car to have been damaged, and then from that, what is the probability of a serious accident, hospitalisation or death occurring from that? Now, because New Zealand doesn't record the tow-away status of an accident, then we can't, and because Australia doesn't have the Japanese imports, then we don't get that information readily available on the Japanese imports, and it's 51% of our fleet, so that complicates things a bit. And as I've already talked about, it is a very complicated vehicle registry that is not ACC's. So this is New Zealand Transport Associations, and they record the information as vehicles come in, and it does depend on where the vehicle came in, on how the vehicle is recorded. So they might be exactly the same, but they will put more information in the model field or the submodel field, depending on how they feel like recording that. It's fair to say it's gotten better in recent years, but we're trying to rate vehicles back to 1975, and so it's going to take a long time for it to get better. So we've spent months, probably even close to a year in terms of the overall time, fixing it up on our end, but not being able to change the data that's held by NZTA. This is the makeup of our fleet by age. Australia and most other countries are going to have something that looks a whole lot smoother. So the huge peak in there is the Japanese import. So we have new cars coming in, which causes a peak at the end. But then you've got 6 or 7 years after they've been in Japan, usually. Then they're brought over to New Zealand and hit our market. And so whatever time that you looked at this, so if you looked at this 10 years ago, all you'd do is move the dates along, and the shape looks pretty consistent. It takes a long time for the vehicles to go through there, and it's definitely an issue that we have to deal with. And these are some of the actual examples that I've already touched on. So we had, for example, the Volkswagen Polo. Because we had split it between NCAP and TSSI to say, well, this is the information that we've got, that meant for the current year we had to break it at 2011, 2012 onwards. It was NCAP. And for the same vehicle, therefore, we had different rates depending on the year that we were sold in, which obviously doesn't make sense to anyone, especially the public. But was essentially, we didn't have that information at that time to say, well, it is the same design and therefore should get charged the same rate. So the model, the database that we've built now has Volkswagen Polo from this year to this year is one model. Then from here, there's been a significant redesign in terms of the chassis and everything else. But we've also had to take into account facelifts and ignore those. So, actually, what point does the model change? Even when we introduce this, we're still going to have issues because a new model doesn't always come out on 1st of January. So therefore, what do we do for the new model that comes out in 2006? There'll be some old models sold in 2006. There'll be some new models sold in 2006. And you won't be able to charge the same rate for the same, within a model. So what we've decided to do is, from 2006 onwards, it gets the benefit of the newer model, which means that some of the newest old models may pay less than their counterparts.
5 minute warning if you want 10 minutes of questions.
Cool. Yep. As I've said, some vehicles are sold under different names or completely different models, brands. We will have issues going forward in terms of year-on-year volatility. So, you know, introducing the start was fine, differentiating there. Someone's in band 4, so they're really happy. What happens if they shift to band 1 the next year? So we're looking at smoothing those in to make sure that we have, you know, a graduated movement, because the data does move around. And essentially, if it should now be in band 1, we'll allow it to move over time to there, but not to happen straight away. Given this, the kind of the changes that we're making, and that we are now saying, well, these vehicles are one model, we might have broken it up halfway in between before, so that's going to add extra complexity to how we introduce this. So, you know, what we're doing now would be the way to start if you were going to start doing this. It's still not going to be perfect. I think that's pretty much it on there. We introduced it thinking that this was a great idea. It is a great idea. It's unlikely to change behaviour, so I think that's the biggest lacking thing with it. It hasn't helped that our minister goes out there and says that this will save lives. but she is our minister and she can say what she wishes to. I'm in Australia, so I'm okay. And so we're going out there now saying, yep, we've had some issues with this. Overall, it's been, most vehicles are classified correctly. There's a small number of anomalies in there that people don't quite get, or they don't quite get the system. So we have had record-breaking call center numbers coming in. It's created some business for us. We've just finished our first consultation, first round of consultation. Usually every year we consult once. Given the complexity here, we decided to, for the first time in 40 years, to break consultation into two parts. So we've gone out there and said, well, here's the principles on how we're going to rate vehicle risk rating along with everything else that we normally consult on for all of the other accounts. Once we've got some feedback on that, we'll go out there and consult on the actual detail of where your vehicle fits within this. So that meant that we could go out there with the database and say, we think the Volkswagen 2010 to 2014 is one model. Does everyone agree? And we've also used, as I said, some manufacturing vehicle experts to go through that list, and we find it, and it'll get better over time, but we wanted to get that as good as possible and then go out there and then say, okay, well, that Volkswagen now goes into band 3, for example. Extra things that we are doing, there's only two slides left. We're trying to still base it on TSSI, the Monash information, but instead of using everything available, we're restricting, we're putting a credibility threshold on which ones we will use. So the first requirement, we already had a requirement in that there had to be at least 100 accidents for that type of vehicle and at least 20 injuries or serious injuries, hospitalisation, fatalities, was our criteria in the past. Now we're saying, well, actually, we'll go a step further, and so the confidence interval, and try explaining confidence intervals to the public. Confidence interval has to, with a 90% confidence interval, has to be less than or equal to a certain size, and that means that we'll get the higher volume of makes and models still captured in there, and there's going to be less volatility year on year, usually. But then if it doesn't have enough credibility in that, the next thing we'll do is go down to NCAP ratings, and we're extending out how far we're using that, because the overall feedback has been, well, people get NCAP. My response generally to that is, well, 20 years ago they didn't. We had to explain what that was, and there was industry outrage in some cases to that as well. So this is an extra bit of information we're bringing in. But going back further, because 3.5 years was the minimum that we could use. So if we've got that, fine, that's the next level. Then stage 3, we went out there and consulted on two options. Our preferred option was, okay, well, we don't have enough credible TSSI information, we don't have a recent NCAP available, so the next thing is, okay, well, we know it's a large SUV, therefore large SUVs should get from 2006, should not necessarily get charged the same as a compact vehicle in 2006. So taking the type of vehicle into account to get something that's going to be less volatile overall, we still have problems with that. You know, one of the issues, and we're using that information at the moment, you've got things like Chery vehicles. I'm not sure if they're sold over here or not, but some of the unsafer vehicles, as people would think they are, but they haven't actually been rated and haven't had enough information to base that on, we'll say, well, that vehicle is getting the benefit of other vehicles in that class. So someone in the industry came up with a term, dumbing up and dumbing down, to say, well, it's just going to squash them together of the other ones. But our preferred approach is to use the market group where we don't have the others. The other alternative is to say, well, there has been some information published in the past for some of these, so an NCAP rating. But then should, as I say, you know, a 15-year-old five-star vehicle pay the same as a five-star vehicle now? So what we were saying was, well, if we use this method, then we should age the NCAP results. It's probably premature to say it, but we're unlikely to go down that road because we can't actually find old NCAP information. It doesn't seem that easy to collect. And then how do we actually age it? It's not going to be a clear-cut way to do that. So we might do that in the future, but probably not for this time. So we're probably going to recommend, or the board's probably going to recommend the market group. And then ultimately, if we don't have any of that, we have to rate everyone. So then it's back to the default in terms of the year of manufacture or the year of first registration.
8 minutes to the end of the session.
Cool. That was it.
Okay.
So, yeah, any questions, comments?
Did you consider any other sort of dimensions, specifically the data or attributes about the owner?
Driving record. Related question. So, what were the scheme objectives in choosing the
Yeah. So the question is, you know, did we use any other things? So driver behaviour was the obvious thing to potentially use, and what is was the intention of doing this? So originally, it didn't make sense that 85% of people or vehicles were paying the same rate. Is there some way that we can encourage people to be safer or make safer, better choices? I suppose was the original challenge. How ACC currently collects levy is through petrol levy, as I said. If that's, you know, so it's at the pump, you can't avoid that. And through your license, your vehicle registration, which is based on the vehicle and no other details on there. So something that's been posed for a long time is, well, why don't you use something like driver behaviour, or at least, you know, the age, gender, demerit points, things like that. So that is something that's been thought about for quite a while, but would require a huge change in the way that we collect levies. So it hasn't gone very far to date, and it's something that's still an ongoing discussion, but we don't have any information on it to start with, and we know that there's going to be issues around that as well. So you know, you've got a teenage, you know, kid who's got the car. Who are you going to register under? You register it under yourself, not the kid, so that you can pay a lower levy. It's also, you can't change your age, generally can't change your gender. You know, so you know, just because you are young and male, yes, on average that means you're going to probably have more accidents, but you're not actually going to change the behaviour of the person either. By charging them more. In fact, you know, I suppose one potential positive outcome is that they don't actually drive, but eventually they're going to have to get behind the wheel, and maybe that's when they're a little bit less stupid, but who knows. So, yeah, ideally, all of those extra information, charging on that or levying on that, makes a lot of sense to a lot of people, but the information isn't available, and the levy collection mechanism that we'd have to put in place would be quite significant. To do that. One of the other problems we have at the moment, I had the levy rates there. Problem we've got is that we're putting levies down again. We're recommending even lower. So we're gonna have, before we introduced this, our average was $330. We went down to $195. We're now recommending $134, which basically, you know, The highest that someone will pay for a petrol-powered vehicle will be $60-something and $30-something for that. You know, so why bother about injury prevention and injuries at all if it costs you $70 or less? And that's an issue we've got overall with ACC, you know, the fact that the levies are coming down so much. Why would you bother as an employer when you're paying? We're recommending 0.8% in terms of a levy rate.
So what change, what behaviour are you trying to create?
None, unfortunately.
So is it more about perceived fairness or equity?
So it's an equity thing. So just, you know, the two things are, it's either equity or behaviour change. Ideally, well, my personal perspective is, you know, behaviour change should be the only reason you do anything. Equity is obviously, you know, you want it to be as equitable as possible. The only arguments you can have for vehicle risk rating are around equity. You know, you can't opt out of it. The only way you can change based on the way that we're charging how much you pay is to sell your vehicle and purchase another vehicle. And that's all good, but that old vehicle's got to be, will be kept in the market as well, the fleet.
Do you think, though, that the equity argument would be stronger still for age-based rating or for geographic-based rating?
It's a lot of cross-subsidy labour, isn't it?
Yes. Yep, yep.
And at least with merit-based rating, there's a chance that might change.
There is. I suppose one of the issues we do have is that most of the cost comes from seriously injured people who are never going to drive again. So, you know, you can't charge them after the fact. In fact, they don't have any income for that. And ultimately, you will base it on age or demerit points, and those people will pay more. But it's whether they can actually change the behaviour for that, and what is the cost of putting that new system in, is the things we've got to... And it is something we are thinking about, and the Minister's keen to explore that kind of line. Weird question at the back.
I was just wondering how you're able to reduce your levies so much. Is that by something else? Or?
We have been unfunded since day one. The ACC started, so as of July, well, actually last year, but officially as of 30 June this year, all of the levied accounts are now funded, fully funded. So we've had to collect more in levies in the past to get to that point. There have also been a lot of other changes in terms of the actual management of the scheme, but a big part of it is that, you know, 1999 and prior, pay as you go, full funding after that, so getting back to the full funding position.
Sorry, one more question. Yep. Just interested in that, so that's 85% of we're paying the same levy. Was there a call from the public to make it more equitable, or was that a purely...
Not that I'm aware of, no. Yeah. And we when we were bringing this in, we had you know, groups of people to say, well, here's this advertising we're going to stick out to let you know that, you know, risk, vehicle risk rating is coming in. And that's where people say, well, you know, I actually pay ACC levy. And, you know, and then there was, you know, how much do I pay? Or maybe it's $20 a year or something in terms of the thing, you know, not... on average at the time, $330. So people had no idea what they were paying, where they were paying that. And that's the case for all of the ACC levies, yeah. Bar the employer account,
yeah,
work account.
Our premium hasn't really changed. Well, it's never changed. We just get it on the CPI every year. And our assumption is that it would never change unless it's driven a call from the community to make it more equitable.
Yeah.
Because
yeah. There has been bigger changes for the motor vehicle account because we had some issues where Treasury wouldn't allow us to project future increases in claims costs. And motor vehicle account, seriously injured, makes up a big portion of that. So they wouldn't allow for the fact that it would even increase with CPI, and let alone it would increase faster than that. So there's kind of a large reduction in the funding position, probably 2009. And so the levies had to catch up and go up even more.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.